तस्माद् भवन्तं मम संश्रयार्थं प्रक्ष्यामि पश्चात् अधुना सुबोधम् अध्यात्मयोग ग्रथितं तवोक्तम् अख्याहि कुतूहलचेतसो मे. Whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult to understand. Please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive and I want to understand this clearly.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Goravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So, here in this verse, we can see how Maharaja Rahugana developed some doubt. And how he wants to clarify this doubt, and how he expresses his inability to understand the instructions by Jada Bharata. In general, as I already explained once, the fifth canto is more or less the collision between two attitudes. And in this particular conversation between Jada Bharata and King Rahugana, we see it very clearly. That King Rahugana represents more or less the attitude of Nishkam Karma. The dutiful king who is performing his duties and who is trying to purify his heart by performing the duties. And we see another attitude of Jada Bharata, who is totally renounced. And this attitude of renunciation, of jnana, although is a logical continuation of Nishkam Karma, at the same time kind of clashes with the attitude of karma. These two attitudes don't go so well together because one still implies certain kind of attraction or attachment to the material world. This is what karma is all about. And jnana means the complete renunciation. And therefore, when the instructions about jnana, or total renunciation to the extent that you renounce your own mind. Basically, the instructions in the previous chapter by Jada Bharata were about this. How to renounce your mind. How to totally, completely become mindless. And that's what jnana is. Although it's called jnana. The ultimate result of jnana, the ultimate achievement of jnana is that there is no jnana at all. There is no jnana, there is no mind, there is no individuality even. There is just pure subjectless awareness. Whatever it is. It's very difficult to understand for normal people. So, but here we can see that this is exactly what troubles King Rahugana. He cannot understand. How is that? And in the next verse, in the fourth verse, which is written in the board, he expresses what he cannot understand. What he cannot understand is indeed very difficult to understand. And those who think that they understand this, they're in illusion. Because being in the body, it's very difficult to understand that I am not this body. Even though we have heard it so many times, and sometimes we're even foolish enough to think that we understand this. What to speak about understanding that I'm not this mind? In the previous chapter, Jada Bharata explains what is the body and what is the mind. He says it's Atma Lingam. Lingam means symbol or designation. It's something like designation of the body, which has nothing to do with us. And basically this is the foundation of the spiritual philosophy. But this very foundation is extremely difficult to understand, because this simple philosophy is that the soul, even though it seems, it appears to be in the body, it seems, appears to be connected with the body, has nothing to do with the body. And it has nothing to do with the mind. And all these connections which are there are very seeming or apparent. And that's not possible to understand. That's very difficult to understand. And therefore, in the next verse, King Rahugana, he will express his doubt. He will say, how do you say this, that when I'm fatigued, or when I'm hungry, or when I'm thirsty, or when I'm in agony of pain, how is that I don't feel this pain? How is that I don't feel this fatigue? How is that I, the soul, don't feel this hunger or thirst? And indeed, you know, theoretically, when we're, you know, well-fed and comfortable, we can sit in a nice, comfortable asana and say, oh, I'm not this body. Yeah, yeah, right. Very, very good. Nice philosophy. But when I'm in pain, when I'm tired, or when I'm thirsty or hungry, how is that I'm not this body? I'm this body. Right, I want to eat, yes. I want to get relief of pain. I need some injection. I need the medicine. I need this, I need that. So many things I need. So, it's a nice theory. But the question here is how to realize it. And the doubt is very natural. The doubt which King Rahugana expresses here is, if anyone has some brain, he will express the same kind of doubt. How is that I have nothing to do with this body? And it's nice to say this, how to realize this, how to really behave in such a way. Because, you know, sometimes we're, you know, very nice in explaining the theory. You know, we give lectures, use, you know, big bombastic words, you know, this and that. But when it comes to action, or our real life, do we behave in such a way? You know, do we still remember I'm not this body? And, you know, if somebody will try to kill us, like somebody tried to kill Jadabharata, you know, they were these big, robust thieves and rogues who caught him. You know, first they gave him nice food. He was eating this nice food, and you know, he was saying very nice. And then they, you know, tied him up with the ropes and said, we will kill you. And he said, okay, very nice. He was not this body. When he was nicely eating, he was not this body. He was not really enjoying it. When somebody tried to kill him, he was not his body either. He didn't try to resist. This is the proof. This is the proof that he realized this. And this is the proof that we didn't realize this. Because when somebody will try to kill us, we will run away like anything. I will scream, save me, save me. Who is you? You are eternal. So the point is that this doubt is natural. And we really have to clearly understand how to get rid of this doubt. Because before we got rid of this doubt, the problem remains. That's basically any spiritual philosophy will start with the explanation that even though we're so attached to our body, and even more than attached to our body, we're more attached to our ideas. We're more attached to our conceptions of life. Like Srila Prabhupada, he uses this standard phrase, material conception of life. So we're not only attached to body, we're attached to this conception that I'm this body. Even stronger than to the body itself. We're attached to the conception which are there in mind and everything. Because we are so attached to this, you know, conception, to this understanding, the spiritual philosophy starts with the statement that this is the source of all your troubles. That because you are so miserably attached to the body, you suffer again and again and again. Because you're attached to the mind, you know, somebody, you know, speaks something about you, you know, in some disparaging way, you know, you're a fool. And you become, you know, so painful. For weeks, you dwell on this kind of, you know, how did he dare to say that I'm a fool? You know, I'm not a fool. You know, if you analyze what happened, you know, somebody just produced some little sound. You are a fool, you know. It has nothing to do with you. It didn't really, you know, it didn't really change anything in your life. Still, you're so painful. you're suffering again and again and again. So the spiritual philosophy starts with this simple understanding, which requires many, many lifetimes to understand or to realize that you're not this body and you're not this mind. And you have nothing to do with the body and the mind. And the point here, which Prabhupada explains in the purport very clearly, is that we really have to know the methodology, how to realize this, how to really get it deep within our system, how to really realize it in reality. There was one interesting story about Lord Buddha. One person approached him, and he was very, you know, learned person, very highly respected person in the society. And he approached this famous monk, Lord Buddha, and he said, I have so many questions. Do you have some time to answer my questions and my doubts? And the Buddha said, no, I don't. The guy was so offended. He said, yeah. He had to swallow this. And he said, you're so busy or what? You're supposed to be a renounced person. You have plenty of time. You know, what's wrong with you? The Buddha said, no, I'm not busy. I have plenty of time. But I will not answer your questions. The guy said, why? You know what, said Lord Buddha. There are three types of listeners. One listener, you know, if I'm to speak to you, I have to understand how you will understand what I'm saying. So he said, one listener is the someone can be compared with the pot which is turned upside down. And no matter if you pour in this pot, nothing will be there. So this is one type of listener, you know, he's just there, upside down. You know, you may pour, nothing comes inside. He said, there is another type of listeners. They have nice hole in their pot of the mind. So whatever you pour inside in this pot, goes in one ear and nicely comes out from the other ear. You know, you pour and pour and pour and it just comes out. Nothing remains inside. He said, but you're not this too. You're the third one. There is another kind of pot. And this pot is filled with filthy things. And you pour nice clear water in this pot and it becomes rotten very soon. So no matter how much you try to give good instruction to this man, you know, it becomes very much rotten. And because it becomes rotten, what is the use? He said, you are this third type, my dear sir. Therefore, I'm not going to waste my time by explaining to you anything because there was no use. You know too many things. And because you know too many things, but you didn't realize all these things, there is no use. This is actually exactly our condition. Because we know too many things. We know too many shlokas, too many bhakti shastras, too many things. Therefore, nothing comes in. Whatever comes in is not being really realized or not being really, you know, acted upon. So, this doubt of King Grahugana is of this nature. The doubt which King Grahugana expresses here, which he cannot understand, is that you know, I really, really, you know, I understand you and I don't understand at the same time. And the doubt is the most painful condition. Arjuna, he says this to Krishna when he says Madhusudana or Keshasudana. When he says that, you know, please kill these doubts. And Lord Krishna himself says, Agyascha Shradadanascha Samshayatma Vinashati. He says that there are three types of people in this world who perish. Three types of people who cannot really realize the nature of the soul. And one is Agya. And Agya is ignorant. Somebody who is just grossly ignorant. Another one is Ashradadanas, the somebody who is doesn't have faith. He's also perished. He's also, he has no hope to get the salvation, to get access to the eternal soul. And the third type is Samshayatma. And Samshayatma is a very interesting expression in Sanskrit. Samshaya means doubt, and Atma means the self. Samshayatma, the phrase which Lord Krishna uses is that, you know, your Atma is consist of doubts. There's nothing else inside. There's only doubts. Doubts, you know, you take one doubt, there is another doubt. You take another doubt, there is another doubt. And only doubts and doubts and doubts. You peel your soul off and the remaining is only doubts, you know, all kinds of it. It consists of doubts. And Lord Krishna says in this verse in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says that the worst lot, the worst fate is of Samshayatma. Why? Because he says Samshayatma, those who are doubtful, they cannot really enjoy neither in this life or in the next life. He says, at least those who are ignorant, they can enjoy in this life. They're very happy, they're enjoying in this life. And those who are Ashradadana, they also can enjoy. They have very nice, you know, program to enjoy. But Samshayatma, they want to believe, and they don't believe. They know something. They know that there is spiritual path, and they cannot follow it. They're too, you know, there is too many doubts, you know. Like I have one devotee, I know one devotee. He's filled of doubts. He's full of doubts, you know. And he's looking, he's so miserable. He comes, you know, what to do, how to get rid of doubts? You tell him, and you know, he comes the next day, I have doubt whether Krishna exists or not. He says, it's amazing. This is amazing how the mind works. The mind works in a very peculiar way. The mind, you know, he says, I don't doubt that there are demigods. I don't doubt there is God, but I doubt that there is Krishna, you know. You know. And actually the doubt is the manifestation of internal dirt. The desires which are there within the heart, they really water down our determination to go along or to follow spiritual path. And therefore, the mind, being the obedient servant of our desires, produces all kinds of doubts which more or less hold you from being too determined on a spiritual path. You know, the mind says, you know, you don't really want it. I know better what you want. So, hold back a little bit, you know. Don't be in a hurry. You know, when you become retired and when you are 85 years old, then maybe you can become totally doubtless and go along this path with full determination and full speed. But for now, don't be in a hurry. You know, so many nice things to enjoy. So this is the cause. The inner cause, we have to be very clear about it. The inner cause for doubts is our material desires. The only one who is completely free from material desires can be free from doubts. Unless and until we have material desires, the doubts will be there. Therefore, Krishna, Lord Krishna says that in the last verse of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, you take the sword of spiritual knowledge. and you cut the desires which are there in the core of your heart. You know, it's a very drastic statement. You know, you take the sword and you just cut within your heart. You just pierce your heart. Because once Sridhananda Maharaj, he gave a very nice explanation of this phenomenon, explaining this verse. He said that why Krishna is so, it's up to the point of being violent. You take the sword and you cut it within your heart. Not just within the heart, but within the core of the heart. He says, because the doubts, this is the most precious possession which we have. And therefore we hide it so deep. You know, when we have something valuable, something which we really need, you know, we hide it very nicely. So Krishna says, you're hiding very deeply within your heart something which you think is very valuable. So you take this sword of knowledge and you cut it. There is no other way. You know, unless you really take this knowledge deep and get it within your heart, there is no hope for you, because the doubts will always be there, and you will always be, you know, you will make one step forward and two steps behind, and again two steps forward and one step behind, and then you will be nicely dancing in one place without really going any further, you know, because of the doubts. Because your mind is not clear. So basically, when we take the spiritual strategy which is there, the spiritual strategy which is there in Vedic literature is there to help us to completely free from the doubts. And for that, you need to have a little thing, you know, the basic thing which we have to do, unless and until we identify ourselves with the mind, we will not be able to get rid of the doubts. The only radical way, the real radical way to get rid of all the doubts is stop identifying with the mind, which will always produce the doubts. So, and in the Vedic literature, there are three basic methodology how to deal with this. It's not easy. To get rid of the mind is not easy. To really stop being mental is not easy. You know, we know this phrase, you're too mental, Prabhu. You know, and indeed we are. You know? It's very clearly can be seen from little outside, you know, you can see this, you know, somebody who is in the mind, you know. Of course, everyone has a first-hand experience of being mental. Usually it comes when you chant japa, you know. This is really time to be mental, you know. You just your mind. You have nothing to do with Krishna. You don't want to have anything to do with anything else. You just your mind. So this is what it is. So there are basically three methods. Three methods how to realize I am not this mind. And this is the main task or the main mission of human life. Nobody else can do it. Only human beings can get rid of this attachment to the mind, which is the most difficult. So there is karma yoga. And karma yoga, basically, the method, the process how to get rid of the mind is that you follow your duty. Matra sparsa stukanta yasitasna sukha dukadaha. Agama paino nitya stam stitiksha svabharata. You know, Srila Prabhupada explains this verse. He says just, you know, how to get rid of this attachment to the mind, to the attachment of the pain and pleasure which is there in the mind, to the attachment of the sukha and dukkha which is there in the mind. Just do your duty. You know, you do your duty, you're very dutiful, the Shastra says this, you do this, no matter what, the mind will scream. The mind will say, no, no, no. And you will say to the mind, no, shut up. You know? You have to take the cold shower early in the morning and remember the hot tap is Maya and only cold tap is... And Prabhupada explains in commenting to this verse that, you know, to take cold bath in the months of Magh is very difficult. Or if you are, you know, wife and you have to cook, you know, you have to cook no matter what, no matter how hot it is, you have to cook anyway. You know, it's hot outside, the sun is so hot, and you're coming to the stove, and the stove is hot, and you're still cooking. So this is how to become a little less mental. You know, you do what you have to do. This is basically the strategy. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki ja, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornita ki ja. The strategy, this is the first method, which is there in Karma Yoga. You do your duty, you fulfill your duty, and, you know, no matter what the mind screams and tells you, no matter what the mind is trying to push you for, you just do it, because you have to do it. Then, of course, but the problem is that you become proud after some time. This is the problem. The problem with this method, even though it is supposed to free you from pride, you become very, very proud karma yogi. You know, I am so dutiful, and I am so nice, and I conquered over my mind, you know? Do you know this? I am so pious, and I am so nice, and I am such a good person, and really, don't you see it? And this is the problem. Because you still remain a doer. By doing your duties, you still remain you still maintain the ego. I'm the doer. I'm doing this. So then, this is the thesis. The antithesis is that, you know, jnana. You renounce. You renounce the world. You renounce the doership. I'm not the doer anymore. This is basically the strategy of jnana. And the strategy of jnana, how to get rid of this attachment to the mind, is that you observe your mind and you neglect your mind. Basically, that's what they do. Those who renounce the world, this is the essence of jnana yoga. Jnana yoga, sometimes people think that jnana yoga is that you study the shastras. Jnana yoga is not that you study the shastras. You already studied all the shastras. Jnana yoga means you observe your mind. Aham brahmasmi. I am not the mind, and you observe this. And Prabhupada explains actually in the last verse of the previous chapter, when Jadabharata explains this method of jnana yoga, Prabhupada, he gives a beautiful explanation. He says, there is one easy weapon with which the mind can be conquered. What is this easy weapon? Prabhupada says, neglect. You just neglect your mind. You know, so many things are there. You just look at this and say, oh, nice. Very interesting. Such a rubbish. Such a garbage. You know? So, you just absorb it. You absorb it, and after years of neglecting your mind, your mind becomes starving. Because what is the food for the mind is when you take it seriously. You know, you take it so seriously that the mind goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. So basically the method of jnana yoga is that you starve your mind to death. You just neglect it and neglect it and neglect it and neglect it, and ultimately the mind loses the steam. The mind, which is so enthusiastic to produce and to concoct and to give you so many ideas of who you are and what you have to do and this and that, the mind becomes little disappointed. You know, I'm trying so hard. I'm doing all these things. You know, nobody appreciates me. You know, I'm such a nice guy. You know, I'm doing this. So this is the method of jnana yoga. Basically, you you more or less try to silence the mind and try to distance from the mind by absorbing the mind. There is also an interesting story in this regard, again, from Lord Buddha's life. Again, the same kind of story. Somebody approached Lord Buddha and he said, "I have so many questions. Please answer all these questions." And he started telling these questions. And Lord Buddha, this time he said, "Yes, I will answer your questions, but not now. In 1 year I will answer your questions. Come back in 1 year, and in the meantime, you know, you think about it, and I will answer." The man said, "Why?" The man said, "This is what I want. Come back in 1 year." And when he was saying this, the disciple of Lord Buddha was sitting there, and he started giggling. He started laughing and laughing and laughing. And the man, he said, "Why did he laugh?" he asked Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha said, "You ask him, he will explain." He didn't want to answer now all these questions. So the man asked, "Why do you laugh?" The disciple said, "Because he is a cheater." This Buddha, he is a cheater. He said, "How is he a cheater? He is cheating you. He is trying to teach you, cheat you." You know, within 1 year, he told also me, 1 year back, he told me, "Come back within 1 year and ask you all your questions." And in the meantime, he said, you know, "You become silent and you just absorb your mind." And then, you know, 1 year later, I have no questions. So if you want to ask him, ask now. Within 1 year, there will be no questions in your mind. He's cheating you. So, and the Buddha smiled. You know, the man went away. So in 1 year, he came back and the Buddha asked him, "Do you have any questions?" The man said, "No, I don't have any questions." And he started laughing. So, but basically, this is the method. This is the strategy. This is a powerful strategy. You just absorb your mind. You're not your mind anymore. You're just absorber of your mind. You neglect the mind. And whatever is there, you don't take it seriously. You just laugh at what's happening, you know. And you say, you know, "Very nice, very nice." What else do you produce? You know, this is, you know, you become the, you get the free ticket to the cinema of your mind. You become the absorber of all these different fantasies which are there, nicely produced in your mind. But again, this is not a very good methodology. There is a flaw, inherent flaw in this methodology either. Why? Because you again become proud of being so renounced and being so neglectful to your mind. You know, the false ego is still there. In the karma path, the false ego is the false ego of doer. In the jnana path, the false ego is the false ego of renouncer. You're so renounced, you know. And after some time, you become very proud of being so renounced, of being so neglectful to your mind and this and that. And therefore, there is only one sure path of spiritual life, which Srila Prabhupada explains here in the purport. The real strategy is bhakti, and in bhakti, bhakti basically starts from this verse, Tasmat Guru Prapadyanta Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. Srila Prabhupada explains this, that Vidhi Pranipatina Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Gyanam Gyanina Statva Darshanaha. Because the real path, or the real path of realization is that you change your ego from the beginning. In the karma path, you still remain your ego of a doer. I am fulfilling my duties. In the jnana path, you still remain, the ego still remains. The false ego, I am the renouncer, I am such a nice sannyasi, you know, look at me, you know, I am so renounced. This ego still remains. You are still, you know, you are in a negative sense, you are still somebody which is not your real ego. So the real path, the spiritual path, starts from the humility. And humility starts from the real surrender to the spiritual master. The spiritual master is someone who can say who you are. You know, otherwise, you will remain either doer or renouncer. And you will not be able to cut this vicious circle of false ego. And that's the problem, you know, like Prabhupada, he's expert in this. Today we read this Brahmatirtha Prabhu's notes about how Prabhupada dealt with him very expertly. Whenever he would feel that there is some false ego, he would just definitely point it out. There is this famous story about Prabhupada when somebody approached Srila Prabhupada and was a very humble expression in his face and said, "Prabhupada, I'm most fallen." And Prabhupada said, you're not most anything. You're just insignificant." Because again, this is the trick of the false ego. You know, the false ego says, "I'm the most this or I'm the most that." And if I cannot be the most powerful, I will become the most fallen. The main part is to be the most. You know, so, and the spiritual master very mercilessly will tell you, you're not the most anything, you're just insignificant. You're just nobody. And therefore, Prabhupada explains that the only real path, the bhakti starts from this. And this is, you have to accept guru in any path. In karma yoga, you have to accept guru. In jnana yoga, you have to accept guru. In bhakti yoga, you have to accept guru. But the relationship with guru is of the nature of bhakti. The very nature of the relationship between the disciple and guru, they become only valid if there is bhakti between the two. And this is the real way to achieve one's own real ego. If there is no bhakti in the relationship between guru and disciple, the relationship are dysfunctional. And only through this bhakti you can really realize your true self through this process of tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatva darsina. Sometimes, you know, once I think Sivaram Maharaj, he made a nice observation that how did he say it? He said that the real qualification of a guru to be far away from the disciple. You know, because when he's far away and he doesn't bother the disciple, you know, then the disciple can be an illusion that he's a pure devotee. When he comes closer and he starts saying something which is not so nice, which you don't like, or do this and that, you know, the whole bhakti vanishes and disappears, you know. So if you want to be a real guru, be far away, as far away as possible, and then, you know. But this is ridiculous. This is all bogus. This is what does not work. What works is tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te gyanam gyanina statva darshinaha. When there is the real humility in the relationship, the relationship has to be filled or has to be, you know, the essence of the relationship is this humility. And basically this verse explains the nature of this humility. That the humility has to be all-pervading. In this verse of Bhagavad Gita, it is said that first you have to do pranipat. Pranipat means you fall down as the stick. Prana means the life air. So pranipat means you more or less, you know, all your life air and everything which is there, you're putting it in front of the lotus feet of your spiritual master. You're surrendering on the physical level, on the level of the body. But this is not enough. This is external. This is a good beginning to start with, to develop humility. But the real humility starts with the other processes, which is pariprasnena and sevaya. Pariprasnena is the humility of the speech. Because it's very difficult to ask questions. Because this is, you know, when you have to be humble in your speech. You asking questions means you don't know anything. you don't know something. But, you know, usually we think we know everything, you know, and why should we ask questions? So this pariprasnana is the humility of the speech, and pranipatena pariprasnana, and the sevaya is the humility of mind. The seva, which is the most important, which is the deepest problem which we have, the pride which is there in the mind. Seva means basically the special attitude within the mind that I am the servant, I want to serve. So this verse, why is it the essence of bhakti and why is it the only sure and the proper methodology to realize the spiritual truth is that if it's being done properly, is that it requires the total, complete, all-pervading humility. You know, humility on the physical level, humility on the level of your speech, and humility on the level of your mind. And in this way only, through the proper attitude of being humble and insignificant, you can only turn your attention away from the material world. You know, our problem is that, and the mind and the body is the mechanisms or is the more or less the instruments of our attachment to the world. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he explains it very nicely. He says that in reality, he quotes the verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam from the prayers of personified Vedas. But the personified Vedas said that in reality the soul have no coverings. There is no body and there is no mind. It's not really the covering of the soul. The soul is always part and parcel of the Lord. And personified Vedas, they say that this is the reality. And Srila Jiva Goswami says that, but how it is? How you can understand this? How you can really realize that you are not the slave of your body and of your mind? And he says, there is only one way to do this. There is only one way, is to divert your attention from the matter and to turn your attention towards the Lord. But how to divert the attention? How to really realize my distinction from the body and mind, which are so nicely and tightly bound in this material world by this, you know, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarya, by all these enemies of the soul. The only way to do this is to surrender to the Lord. And surrender means to really accept the ego of being somebody insignificant. And this can only be realized, this can only be done through this process of surrendering to spiritual master. Therefore, in this particular verse, when King Rahugana explains his doubts, Srila Prabhupada said that there is only one way to get rid of the doubts. There is only one way to get rid of the material desires. The only one way to get rid of all the plans and all the stupid things which are there in the mind. The only one way to distance oneself from the mind is to surrender to spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyanta jigyasam shreya uttama. Just really to surrender. And then by the mercy of spiritual master, by the real relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple, this process of internal spiritual realization can take place. And of course I'm speaking this in front of Shruti Kirti Prabhu, which is not very nice for me to say this. He is the one who should explain all these things, because he is an example of an ideal disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and he teaches all of us what it means, how to get rid of this miserable attachment to the mind through the process of surrendering to the spiritual master. And we have to be eternally grateful to him for this, eternally obliged, because he is teaching us the most confidential secret of spiritual life. Thank you very much. So I guess I should stop now. Is there any questions?
Yeah.
No, you can realize it in a sadhana stage. It is said that you can realize your own identity on a stage of asakti. When your attachment to the Supreme Lord becomes very, very strong, then the glimpse of your own identity through this attachment also comes to your mind and your understanding, to your heart. Because basically, it's very easy to understand. We create our artificial identity or our artificial personality through the material attachments. What we are? We are just a sum total of our attachments. This is our artificial personality in this material world. I am the citizen of this country, I am the patriot, I am the, you know, the husband of this nice wife who is controlling me so nicely, and I am the father of these nice children, and so on and so forth. Through the attachment, the false personality more or less appears, or being formed. So the real personality or the real identity is also realized through the attachment, but through the attachment to the spiritual subject matters. It's very interesting. The Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manak Shiksha, the instructions to the mind, he starts the instructions to the mind from this statement: Guru Gasthe Goshtalaisha Sujanes Busurgane Svamantra Sri Namni, and then Navayuva Dvandva Sharane. So he says, oh my mind, Svantar, my inner self, oh brother, he says, Brataha. Brataha means, in Russian, it's also brat means brother. Brataha. Oh, my brother, oh my dear mind, I fall down in front of you and I'm, you know, touching your lotus feet. My only prayer to you is that you get attachment to what? Guru Gasthe Goshtalaisha Sujane Busuraganesva Mantri Sri Namni Navayuva Dvandva Sharane. And he gives the list of the spiritual entities or spiritual categories which the mind has to develop identity, and through the attachment to this identity, he will find his own identity. He says, Guru, first you have to grow, you have to be attached to your gurus. Goshthe, you have to be attached to the inhabitants of Vrindavan or the pure devotees. Goshtalaisha, you have to be attached to the Madhyamadhikaris. So, Goshthe, you have to be attached to the land of Vrindavan. And Goshtalaisha, you have to be attached to the pure devotees, inhabitants of Vrindavan. Sujanes Busuragane, you have to be attached to intermediate devotees. And you have to be attached to Kanishtha Adhikaris, Busurgane, to the Brahmanas, to those who are attached to the mode of goodness. Svamantra Srinamni, you have to be attached to the mantra which you received through the initiation and to the holy name. And then you will develop attachment to Navayuva Dvandva Sharane, to the eternally useful couple of Vrindavan, which gives you shelter. And through this attachment, you realize who you are. So therefore it is said that on the level of asakti, when the attachment becomes strong, when the attachment becomes basically unshakable, then the glimpse of your own spiritual identity also comes to you, and you really you understand that I am the spirit soul, and you understand who you are in relationship. Because we always have to be in relationship. And that relationship means attachment. So the understanding of our identity of the soul can be done through that attachment, which is coming through the process of bhakti. Of course, there is this mystic yoga process when you try to, you know, identify your soul or Sankhya yoga process, but it, in reality, it doesn't work. The only thing which does work is this process of spiritual attachment or developing spiritual attachments, which starts from the attachment to the spiritual master. Okay. There is no questions. There could be. There could be. Yeah, I'll explain.
Grow. He says, you have to be attached to your spiritual masters. And this is very visible in the example of Raghunath Das Goswami himself, who had many spiritual masters, starting from Yadunandan Goswami and then from Yadunandan Goswami to Swarup Damodar Goswami and from Swarup Damodar to Sanatana Rupa, so on and so forth. But, and it is said that that the spiritual masters are on the same level. Moreover, there is a verse in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where it is said that you cannot achieve perfection unless you have many spiritual masters, which is somewhat shocking for us. We are used to think differently. But the explanation is simple. The contradiction can be very easily resolved, is that you have only one spiritual master, and spiritual master is one. Prabhupada explains this. Actually, the Guru Tattva is the aspect of God. This is the descending feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to descend, to uplift the fallen souls, he takes this aspect of Guru, Guru Tattva. And the point is that we have to be attached first to one Guru and to his teachings. Guru Mukha Padmava Kya Chitette Koriya Kya. I have to make my mind totally, completely one with the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Chitette Koriya Kya. I'm more or less forcing my mind to become one with the teachings of my spiritual master. Because, and for that you need one spiritual master. Because if from the beginning you have, you know, to hear different people, and because your mind is not trained to become one with the spiritual teachings, you will develop doubts. You will find contradictions. Moreover, the mind will look for contradictions. Because the mind wants to become, to remain independent. So the mind subconsciously will look, oh, he says this and he says this. Oh, this is old nonsense. I'll be on my own. You know, how is that there are spiritual masters and somebody says this, somebody says this. Oh, this is contradiction. So this is what the mind will do. So first, the first stage, which is very important, you have to train your mind to become one with the instructions which are coming from one spiritual master, where there is no contradictions. Because it's coming from one mouth, through the one tongue, and you know, one mind is there, and the instructions is very consistent. But when you develop the attachment, then you can listen to others. Then what happens, then your mind will filter out the instructions of others through the teaching which you already established in. You already established in the teaching of one person, and this is the step number one. You have to be established in very firmly in the teachings which is coming from your Diksha Guru. And then you can take Siksha from so many others. And if something is contradictory, it doesn't bother you, you know. You just filter it out or reconcile it very easily with the teachings. You understand what it is. And then you gain something from this. But unless you are fixed, you are established in the following of one person, then the mind will trick you. The mind will just get bewildered, you know, more and more bewildered. And he will go there and there and there, and he will say, yeah, probably the instructions from this spiritual mind is not enough. I am not developing spiritually because it's not enough. It's not enough, usually, because you don't follow the instructions of spiritual master. But you blame your spiritual master. You say, oh yeah, he's not qualified. He's not Uttamadhikari. I need somebody who is Maha Bhagavata Tratata, something like this. You know, and then only I will be saved. Just you stupid. Your mind is stupid, you know. Just you're trying to shop around in the spiritual market, in the spiritual fair. But you know, first, therefore, it is said very strongly, the spiritual master is one. And first, to realize this truth, that this is all coming ultimately from the Supreme Lord, to realize this truth, you have to be firmly established in the teachings of one spiritual master. And then, you know, then
You can listen to others and you will not be disturbed by this. And you will gain something through the teachings of others as well. So that's the process. Okay. Well. It is also being explained, I don't remember exactly where, but the definition of heart, I can find for you the Sanskrit for this, the definition of the heart. The heart is basically, when the spiritual literature speaks about the heart, it means the consciousness, because the soul is there in the heart. And the consciousness is the energy of the soul. The consciousness, the soul is radiating or emanating this consciousness or the awareness. Therefore, the consciousness, either conditioned consciousness or pure consciousness is called heart, because it's there in the heart. But when the consciousness is conditioned, when the heart, when by heart, sometimes Prabhupada translates this Sanskrit word chetana as heart. Chetadarpanam arjanam. You purify your heart by this process of nam sankirtan. Chetana means consciousness, basically. It's conditioned consciousness, more or less. It's consciousness treated as the whole, as one entity, as one category. So, and when we say heart, we mean this consciousness which is treated as one category, as undivided, non-differentiated consciousness. That's what it is. And the mind, when we say mind and show here, is that the mind has body, right? The mind is a part of the subtle body, and the gross part of the body of the mind is the brain. Even though the consciousness is being transmitted from the heart, because the soul is there, but still, it would be foolish to say that the brain has nothing to do with the mind. It has. The brain is the gross mechanism through which mind operates. Although mind is separate from the brain, but it needs the conditioned mind needs the brain for the functioning. So it uses it as a vehicle. It's more or less gross vehicle. Therefore, when we say mind, we show this. Because the consciousness which is transmitted from the body takes shape of the mind, being the, more or less the identity of the soul is being delegated to the mind, and the mind is using the brain for the functioning. Therefore, when we say mind, we sometimes show this, and it's not wrong. But ultimately, we have to know that the mind is this Atmalingam, the symbol of or designation of the soul, and the soul is in the heart, therefore it's even more correct to call the heart. Boss is correct, and you can say this, the brain. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gaur Nitai ki jai.